tonight we will be talking about what's underneath the Denver International Airport, if anything. I have recently heard a little bit about this, and people were like, everyone knows what's underneath the Denver International Airport. So it piqued my interest in finding out what were people saying. And I found a post on Reddit by someone that claimed to work there, and the post was 3 years ago. And I can't tell you if this is true or not, but it's a very scary story. And so let's go there and check it out. I will read this to you. It's under the No Sleep Reddit, and the title is There's Something Underneath Denver International Airport. The username is Darth Varda, and like I said, this post was written 3 years ago. And what makes it even more creepy and scary is the state of the world today. So here we go. About 2 months ago, I was hired at DIA to maintain their concourse system. For those of you who have never been, there's this neat little train that runs super fast to three separate concourses, A, B, C. It's actually rather fun to ride. Now, as I'm sure you can imagine, this little train requires a lot of work to keep it going. So once every week, usually at night, we decommission it and do some upkeep on all the components involved. It's a sweet gig. Pay is good, job is straightforward, and I have a very cool boss. Colorado's not too shabby either. But something happened last night that makes me think I need to get out quick. Now, I'm no stranger to all those conspiracy theories about this place. In fact, being the greenhead, I've been subjected to all sorts of spooky tales told to me by the patrons of the airport and co-workers alike. I've heard about Lucifer, the enormous bright blue demon horse statue that killed its creator, how it signifies the coming of end times, and that its hot red eyes glow deep into your soul, driving you slowly mad, that the Freemasons, the Illuminati, and secret shadowy government operations all have their tendrils transfixed to the place, about FEMA, the tunnels, the murals and the artwork, the shape of the airport itself, that a decade ago, the windshields of 14 airplanes mysteriously shattered. Some said it was the weather, others whispered that it was the electromagnetic pulses being tested deep underground. What many may not know, though, is that what many of you may not know, though, that these are only the public-facing conspiracies. There's a whole other world of conspiracies passed down from generation to generation of the employees who work here. For instance, a few of my fellows have told me that late at night, when they're down there working in the tunnels, they can hear what sounds like a barely audible moaning. The moan, they say, isn't high-pitched or low, but both. They say it spans entire octaves, like a crowd of people are all making the same sound at once. Others have told me a tale about how one worker once got lost in the tunnels long ago, and that his struggles to find his way back to the surface, he found a mysterious room covered in weird glyphs, and on one wall there was a strange-looking keypad. The keypad to nowhere, they called it. And then there's Concourse 23, supposedly built deep, deep underground, below the abandoned tunnels of the automatic baggage system. It apparently has ties to the New World Order, or the Army, or the Nazi scientist, or maybe all three. Even old Tom, one of the friendly janitors, has complained to me about some supersonic sound that he's been hearing there for the past 10 years, making him feel sick, stupid, says it's a mind control experiment. Yes, there are lots of conspiracies surrounding DIA, but almost all of them are complete bull. Still, there's something quite eerie about the place. First, and most obvious, it just looks weird. It's supposed to mirror the mountains, but instead just looks like many pointed circus tent. An airy natural light filled with circus tents. And second, the entire construction of the place was highly controversial to the locals at the time. They said there was no true need to replace the Stapleton Airport, and grew increasingly angrier as the cost of this new, unneeded airport grew so high. And why, they wondered, was it built in the middle of nowhere, in a small valley no less? Despite all of this, though, I could give you reason after reason why most of these conspiracies can be disproved. Sure, these tales were strange, but they all seemed relatively innocuous to me. From the first, I viewed them as interesting local lore, nothing more. And yet, there was one conspiracy that tickled me in a way that none of the others ever did. One that even I speculated about, unsure what to believe. I wanted to believe, but only because I've seen it. In fact, I work near it almost every day. It's one of the ones about the locked door. See, there's this locked door on the way between Concourse B and C. It's hidden between the fans that help propel the train forward. Each and every employee who works with this train is given a key to the door, but they are also warned that it must remain locked at all times. In a way, it reminds me of that fairy-tailed Bluebeard, just like the girl in those stories. All of us tried our keys in mad desperation to quench our curiosity. None have worked, not a one. Some suggested it was just a prank, something to give us fuel for gossip, and there was nothing more behind that door except a long-forgotten closet or a water heater, or nothing at all. Others weren't so sure. They peered at the door with squinted eyes and tight mouths, worried what lay behind it. Many, many, including me, speculated maybe it was a secret tomb, a place the Masons could go to worship. The entrance to the Concourse 23, some other nefarious underground base? Me? I just thought it was some sneaky, asinine trick to see which employees were actually trustworthy. If it was, though, it didn't work very well, or at least no one can be trusted when their curiosity is piqued. We all tried our keys, all of us. The image of the locked door lingered in my mind long after work and occupied much of the time spent laying in my bed before sleep. It was just so strange to me, so enticing, sinister. And yet, for nearly a month, I went about my business without seeing anything out of the ordinary. I remember it clearly when I saw the first indication that something else might be going on at the DIA. It was late. I was leaving. I saw a light dim with moments of intense brightness and recognized it as a flashlight being pointed slightly towards me and then away. Curious, I walked closer to the glass inside the door, expecting to see something, you know, relatively normal. One of my coworkers searching for the batteries we had lost early, or maybe the second inspector doing his last rounds of the day. Instead, I saw a man wearing an impeccable black suit and a gas mask. He was squatting by the locked door, looking left and right, down the track and up it, his back towards me, leaving me completely unseen from where I was standing on the darkened platform behind the sliding doors. His smooth leather shoes shined in the dim light casted by his flashlight, and I could barely make out the hue of his wood-colored hair. He turned to look farther down the tunnel that connected to Concourse C, and I swiftly hid behind one of the walls separating the doors. For some reason, I didn't want that man, whoever he was, to see me. He didn't seem like a normal employee, and my mind instantly jumped to all those theories I had heard or helped think up. After a moment, when my breath had slowed and my heart slid down my throat, I peered around the wall. The man was gone, and the tunnel was dark. Confused and scared, I left in a hurry. The next day, after a sleepless night, I asked a coworker that I was on friendly terms with about the man. I was afraid of asking anyone else, afraid they might judge me or think that I had finally cracked or that I was lying, trying to add to the gossip, the lore. I was hoping she would at least give me the benefit of the doubt. "Hey," I said, catching her up as she was walking out of the break room. "I saw something last night." She raised an eyebrow. "Something here," I continued. "I picked up the late shift, and when I was leaving, I saw this guy. It looked like he was examining the locked door. He didn't look official, or maybe he looked too official. Just a guy in a black suit and a gas mask." "Gas mask?" she said, clearly skeptical. I nodded. "Dude, I know it's legal here, but take it easy." I rolled my eyes, saying nothing. She sighed. "Could have just been a Fed checking for a EMP leak or something. Or maybe the second inspector was cosplaying. But yeah, that's pretty weird. Don't tell old Tom." We laughed, but inside I felt the fear boiling up in my gut. Who was that man? And what the hell was behind the door? "Look," my coworker said, seeing that I was still worried. She looked around us, making sure no one else was near, and lowered her voice. "This wouldn't be the first time I've heard of a dude in a black suit acting suspicious in a place he shouldn't and couldn't possibly get access to. I wouldn't worry about it too much. Just a normal day in the office." I looked at her, smiled, unsure whether she was being facetious or not. She winked and walked away. Last night, my morbid curiosity came true. Last night, the locked door was unlocked and opened, and I couldn't help myself. It was a Bluebeard moment. The second inspector asked me to stay a little later than usual, since we've been having maintenance issues with the train all day. He wanted me to do one final inspection before I left for my scheduled 3-day weekend. It was late, very, very late, the witching hour, as Mom says, and I was one of the few people left in the building. Walking down the tunnel was harder than usual, scarier, and my feet felt like they were cast in steel, heavy, slow. The air itself felt electrified, and I began wondering about the EMPs and if they really did test them deep, deep below my feet. When I saw it, the door open, I hesitated for a moment, looking back behind me and peering ahead, making sure I was alone before I approached it. Beyond the door was a severe fluorescent light. I could imagine how it looked from afar as I stood there, a silhouette framed against an ungodly bright rectangle of light. Inside was a square room, maybe 300 square feet. It seemed to be made entirely of dull metal and was completely empty. On either side of the room were heavily locked doors, but one totally black and shut tightly, while the other was corroding reddish color and slightly protruding at an odd angle. Leaning next to the wall at the base of the black door was a familiar-looking gas mask. I stared at it for a moment, contemplating whether or not to take it, when I heard a resounding boom, the door to the tunnel slamming shut. I ran to it, panicked, hoping it would slide open with ease, letting me out of this place. It was locked. I made my way back to the black door, trying the handle, which turned smoothly to the left, but no matter how hard I pushed it or pulled, it wouldn't budge. I turned, looking at the other door. It looked, there's no other way to describe it, sickly. The metal itself looked like it was rotting from the inside out, flaking off in large, sharp chips that littered the floor around it. I approached it cautiously, grabbed onto the handle, it was warm to the touch, and pushed down. It stuck slightly before yielding to my grasp and swinging outwards with a piercing screech of metal on metal. Behind it was a dimly lit staircase that descended into the obscurity below. I stood back for a moment, unsure if I should go down or not, before my curiosity got the best of me, propelling me to take the first step. After that, it became easier, and I began counting the steps to the bottom. I lost count at 123, but soon reached the last landing. I suspected I was about 4 or 5 stories underneath the lowest level of DIA. I was standing in an extremely dark, long, and thin tunnel. Looking up behind me, I could barely make out the dim slit of light from the open door I had come through. As I walked deeper into the darkness, my eyes began to adjust, allowing me to see a spooky red glow coming from the end of the tunnel, the exit. It took me a great deal of time to finally reach it, but when I did, I gasped. I was standing in a area so high I couldn't even make out the ceiling above me. I looked back and the tunnel was dark, and above the entryway, words were carved. The abyss looks back. I shook my head, looking towards the cavern, steeling myself, and took the first steps forward, shuddering as I heard my footsteps echo loudly around me. Suddenly, a dim beam shot out from above, illuminating a small metal table with a single chair. I wondered if there was some sort of movement activation system and became more aware of myself. I walked closer and saw two things: a pool of dark liquid surrounding it, that I try not to think about, and a smooth black binder lying on the table opened to a section that read, "Procedure. Hope to God it doesn't happen. In case of breach." Mystified, I stepped around the pool of liquid and flipped the binder closed, trying to see what it was called. Scrawled across the top of the binder in white ink was "Quarantine Procedures." I tried flipping it back to the procedure, accidentally letting it go too soon. The cover smacked to the table with force, creating a sound that rang out loud and true in the emptiness. I cringed, then cowered. It started immediately, a low rumbling, yet strange, high-pitched moaning. It was like I was hearing several people make the sound at once. I looked around, trying to find the source of the sound, but I saw nothing. I moved forward, apprehensive, and realized I was nearing a great chasm. I could barely make out the edge of it in front of me. I stopped short and peered over it, seeing what looked like nothing. Or maybe it was the chasm that went on forever. Either way, it looked empty, endless. But as I stood there, staring below, I began to make out something sick, a mass of what looked like blackened human bodies twisting together, melted to one another, writhing as if in pain or pleasure. Suddenly I saw the whites of too many eyes, all looking towards me, glaring. I yelped, reeling backwards and falling. Behind me, a clanging sound rang out, and I looked back to see an enormous blob of burnt black bodies near the small metal table. A few of its hands held the binder, ripping it to shreds. I stood up. It saw me and froze for a moment before making a horrific sound and heaving towards me. I turned and ran as fast as I could, hearing the moaning grow louder in the chasm to the right of me and behind me. I could hear it scuffling, scraping, screaming, trying to keep up, trying to get me. I was nearing an incredibly high wall, and I ran towards it, hoping there was a way out. I heard a muted whistle and looked to my left. There, underneath a small bulb, glowing blue, at such a low frequency I could barely make it out, was the man in black suit I had seen weeks ago. He was wearing the same gas mask. His messy, slightly wet hair looked black beneath the light and stuck up at odd angles against the mask straps. He waved, then beckoned me over. I took a quick look behind me, scared, and there it was, a great roiling mass of hands and mouths and bare arms slowly pulling and squeezing its way towards me. I was scared stupid, unable to move. "Hey!" I blinked, then leapt into action, running as fast as I could towards this man. He swung the door behind him open as I approached, and through it I could see a brightly lit staircase leading up to a black door with an insignia cut into it. I was too far to see what it was. The man gestured to the door with his head, prompting me to go through it, but I started to say, I wanted to ask him so many questions. My voice jerked short, though cut off by him pushing me, though not violently or angrily, but like he was trying to save my life. I staggered forward, my heart pounding in my chest, my mouth dry. Behind me, the door was creaking closed. I turned and yelled a frantic thank you. He gave me a thumbs up before turning towards the monster, the unholstering the pistol on his hip, and as the door swung fully shut, I heard four shots fired and saw in quick succession four enormous explosions of bright light through the cracks. I'm no expert, but they looked much much brighter than what simple gunpowder would cause. A high-pitched screaming, a low-pitched yelling, sounded out in unison, raising the hairs on my arms and making me trip backwards slightly on the stairs before I turned and ran all the way up them. As I neared the black door, the insignia became clear. A lion wearing a crown and a unicorn wearing a bejeweled necklace, holding up a shield split into quarters. The symbols in each section were worn, and I couldn't make them out. Perched atop the shield was an open eye with an iris in the shape of a 23-pointed star. I only know this because I had time to count. Turns out the black door was a tinted glass portal to an elevator. I mashed the red button projected on the small touch screen to the right of the door frame repeatedly, cursing the elevator for being so slow. Another shot rang out and scream rose up again, louder this time. And it rang around the stairway, even though the door was closed. A tiny beep sounded, and the glass door slid open as I scrambled inside. It was the size of a small room and lowly lit. A smooth female voice rang out around me. Leaving sub-basement 23. Decontamination in process. Perplexed, I looked around me and then looked up. Above me were hundreds of minute jets. I covered my face not a second too soon as the jets activated, spraying me with unusual scentless substance that seemingly boiled off my clothes but left my skin and hair soaking wet. The substance was so cold it burned, and I tried wiping it off with my shirt. Another tiny beep sounded, and the smooth female voice spoke again. Arrived. Basement level. The glass doors slid open, and I lurched out, disoriented, into a lightly illuminated room with a single black door across the way. The walls were covered with strange symbols, and I didn't recognize as being part of any human alphabet, and I stared at them in wonder, trying to place them, slowly revolving around the room as I looked. I stopped at the spot where the elevator was, but saw only a blank wall with a single keypad projected on it. I shuddered and headed towards the black door, which opened effortlessly, and suddenly I was back in the 300-square-foot metal room, back where I began. Behind me, the heavy black door swung shut with a resolute boom. The gas mask lying next to it was gone. The reddish, sickly door was closed too, tightly, not stuck out like before. To the right of me, the locked door was locked no more, and I quickly exited the room, hearing it swing shut as I left. The tunnels were brighter now, and I wondered how much time had passed while I was down there. As I was exiting the maintenance door, I ran into my coworker. She stopped dead in her tracks, looking at me with worried, suspicious eyes. "Hey, you are still here?" I said nothing. "It's just I talked to the second inspector. He said you went home hours ago, or at least thought you did. Said you never checked back in with him." She looked closer at me. "Hey, are you okay? And why are you wet? Did something, you know, strange happen?" I heard a noise, like screaming. Yeah, I'm fine," I shook my head. No, I'm not sick. No, I'm not. I'm sick. I don't feel well at all. Think I may have fainted down there or blacked out. Stress, maybe. Gonna go home. Could you let him know? Oh, and I didn't get a chance to fix the fans down there. So yeah, gonna go home. See you Monday." I staggered past her towards the exit to the airport. "Okay, sure," she called after me. "Get some rest." But I haven't been able to get any rest. I haven't been able to stop thinking about what happened, what I saw, what is underneath The DIA. Who was the man? My mind keeps fluctuating between the idea that the government or some other clandestine cabal may be protecting us all from that monster, and the thought that they might not be, but they are trying to weaponize it or keeping it from further study. Either way, I am afraid of what I saw and the implications. Hiding something like that in a place so many people use on a daily basis, and I fear that I am going slowly mad. When I sleep, a single short phrase rattles around in my brain. The abyss looks back. And so, after this person wrote something, someone replied to them, and he said, "So, are you one of the bombardiers here at the airport? We probably crossed paths a few times then. As an employee at DIA myself, I can attest to the fact that most everything and the description-wise about the airport that OP has said is true. The train connecting the main terminal, the Concourse ABC, is one I take multiple times a day. There's a lot of weird artwork you can see from the train itself, like hands outstretched running down the tunnel and pickaxes reaching at you. I've never been in the train tunnels myself, but there are doors in the tunnels that, knowing the geography of the airport, shouldn't lead anywhere, yet there's a door there, and there's lots of doors like that all over DIA. Even I myself have witnessed some strange things at the airport, although nothing compared to what the OP has experienced. There's tons of oddities at DIA, especially underneath the concourses themselves." Okay, so we've heard from the main poster on Reddit 3 years ago that was claimed to be an employee at the DIA, and then another Denver International Airport employee responded briefly, and there's plenty more of people that responded, but I thought this was very interesting, to say the least, and thought that you would like to hear this creepy story. True, I do not know, but nonetheless, creepy. Till next time.